Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. In the background, what you're listening to is our new theme song that we must acknowledge all of people who participated in its recording, the Clark Chateau, Kevin Cook, Clark Grant, and the Children's Choir, led by Heidi Schnarr. The children's names are Audrey, Amelia, Finley, Journey, Ben, and Mom, Havila. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun, and personally, I just love it. I think it's perfect. This week on Heartstock, first of all, I have to say thank you so much for tuning in and listening. It is a mildly gorgeous day here in Butte, and our guest this week is Yarrow Craner. In just a moment, we will be back, and Yarrow will introduce himself and tell you what he's up to. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock. For tuning in. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. Our guest this evening is Yarrow Craner. Hi, Yarrow.
Hello, Carol. How are you?
I am most excellent. Not bad for somebody who has spent all day on the computer. Yarrow, you have a lot of irons in the fire, as we like to call it. Please tell everybody who you are and what you do.
Well, I am currently the founder and CEO of a nonprofit, which is a global network called Hatch, bringing together people to accelerate each other's work to better the planet and work on global challenges that are in alignment with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And so things like education, climate change, gender and race equality, and also founder of a technology platform called H360. Which is an AI machine learning platform to untap potential and be a collaboration engine within networks and communities.
First thing I would like to talk about, because there's a lot of material in just what you said now, I would really love to hear what led you to this place in your life. What was your inspiration? Where did you grow up? Can you help us get to know you a little?
Sure. I think the first, biggest role model that I had in my life was my mom, who left an abusive relationship when I was 2 years old, 25 cents in her pocket, and proceeded to earn enough money to slowly work her way through her family's first college degree. And so there was a few years there where we were moving kind of in and out of homes that were getting condemned and bulldozed. And I just, at that point, became rather used to change and kind of maybe enamored by it, and realized at a certain point later on in life that creating change and being able to kind of help direct positive change was something that I had a skill set for and was kind of mildly addicted to, and finding others that were doing the same. So I graduated film school from Montana State University, went to Los Angeles to be a director, and I was in the film industry for a while and ended up starting the company a little bit by accident, based on the premise of real life superheroes, not athletes and entertainers as the only role models that we have, but educators and scientists and composers as a platform to be able to support each other in the work that they're doing. And also using that platform as a way to inspire kids in the next generation to tap into their own superpowers. And, I realize that there are people within your communities and families that are amazing human beings, and also, most importantly, within you. So that was a company that we started in 99, and it grew to about 1.5 million people. It was one of the pioneer social media sites. It was acquired in 2003, at which point I came back to Bozeman and Montana to figure out what that next chapter was, and realized that the company that acquired us had purchased a brand and not the purpose, and the purpose was still to go find and connect these heroes together, which is what led to Hatch. And I've been doing Hatch for the last 15 years, and it continues to evolve. And we're really proud of the impact and that Hatch as an organization and a community and a network has had.
So let's go back. I'm really curious. When your mom was making a life for herself and her family, where was all that happening at? Where was that? Was that here in Montana?
She went to undergrad in Minneapolis. And so we were there until I moved to Bozeman in Montana in second grade. And when she graduated with her first degree, her grad degree, her first teaching job was on the Rocky Boy Indian Reservation up near Havre. So we moved there for seventh and eighth grade. I was the only white kid in the whole school, and they called me Little Custard. And that was essentially the game. You know, if they could catch me before I could get to my house every day after school, then they would have a lot of fun.
I can imagine. So
I moved there playing cello, and I left there lifting weights.
So at some point, did they stop chasing you because they were afraid what would happen to them if they caught you?
Oh, no, they caught me every other day. I got kicked around quite a bit. But right toward the end of that last year, I'd had enough and you know, basically turned around and chased a bunch of them off, and they realized that was pretty much the end of that game.
Yeah.
So, but it took a year and a half before that happened.
So what kind of good takeaways did you gain from that experience that has helped you with Hatch and what you're doing now?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I did have a very transformative moment, kind of an aha moment, about a year and a half later when I was going to school in Helena before I moved back to Bozeman High. And I came out around the corner at this basketball tournament and saw all these kids that used to bully me. And I had continued to get really fit, and I was wrestling and playing football. And basically I had this moment of like, wow, I could just completely crush these kids right now. And this almost kind of like a bunch of flashcards, like of all of the reasons why they carry the anger that they have, and having that empathy and just kind of realizing that they're perpetuating this cycle, but I don't need to be with someone who perpetuates that cycle. And I walked up and said, "Hey, how are you?" and kept walking. And I think that the takeaway for me has always been, I've just been attracted to kind of others, you know, people that don't necessarily fit in, fringe dwellers, you know, not necessarily the straight A athlete kids, just more of the people that are right at the edge of the classroom. And in some cases probably getting in trouble because they're bored and hyper-intelligent and all of these things you learn later on in life. But for Hatch, I'm always seeking out these people who are bucking systems and kind of pushing against the norms. And I think that, you know, that experience in the reservation and also, like, you know, being born a white male comes with a lot of privilege, and just realizing that and, you know, feeling almost blessed that I had this opportunity to understand what racism can feel like from a reverse perspective. You know, it's like, I don't really think that, you know, many white males feel that or have that opportunity. And, you know, lucky for me, I get to kind of move on to a different community and not feel that every day, but it is definitely ever present. And watching the news last year with Charlottesville and these people in white hoods walking through campus just in broad daylight was mind blowing. And I think especially living in the North, we're a little bit more sheltered from that. You know, I was talking to friends of mine, they're like, yeah, I mean, racism has never left. This is a very ever-present malady in our society. So we're working harder at Hatch to try to be a part of the solution there, and consciously reaching out to create partnerships with inner city schools. And so it's something that we're, you know, we take very seriously and want to try to help be a solution for.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about Hero Project and Talent for Humanity and how they may or may not relate to Hatch.
Well, Talent for Humanity was a book that was put together from an author, and I was really honored to be asked to be featured in this book. And it's a of stories of people who have overcome challenges and kind of dedicated their life toward, you know, bettering humanity. And so it was a book that came out a couple of years ago. Ironically, I was just at a conference in Europe, and this person from Finland showed up and handed me this book and said, "I just saw this book and your name's in it." I hadn't seen that book in, you know, a couple of years. It was also felt so interesting. I was like, I'm the other side of the world, and for that to kind of land in my lap was kind of surreal. But, and the, you know, I think that the reason why he asked me to be a part of that book was just the continuation and the thread that's happened from the Hero Project to Hatch, which is a little bit like, you know, Secret Society of Real Life Superheroes 3.0. And it's just a continuation of that work where we're trying to find scientists and composers and people who are pushing the boulder up the mountain of impossible and creating a support system in which they can lean on each other and create a peer-to-peer mentorship and also reach back to this next generation and make sure that, you know, there's a seat at the table for all of the people that are passionate about creating a brighter tomorrow. And it sounds a little bit cliche, but like when you put a room full of 100 people together that you've handpicked, that 100 people can exponentially have serious impact if they're, you know, connecting with each other in a very meaningful way and forming collaborations. That 100 can impact the lives of 100 million. So those are the metrics that we're striving for.
So the person who approached you to be in the book, Talent for Humanity, who was that? And who else is in the book?
There's a lot of really interesting people in that book. There's an artist named, let's see, I want to make sure that I say it correctly. The author's name was Thierry Sanchez, and he's out of Belgium. There's an artist named Reza. Another person named Eliza Hava, Patrick Gaffney. They're very diverse stories, and each has a, you know, really, really compelling backstory. The book is extremely well written and moving. So I'm highly recommend it. You can find it on Amazon.
So let's dig into Hatch just a little bit. We're going to take a break here in just a couple minutes, but can you kind of take us through a timeline of its genesis and how do you pull something like this off? I mean, this is pretty major.
Well, it's gone through a lot of iterations, and it started out as more of a festival model in which we thought that scaling it would have more impact and scaling it larger. And over the years, Hatch has really been an exercise of stripping things away and simplifying and really concentrating on the people that are in the room, not necessarily, you know, whiz-bang production, but very intentional design. And, you know, over 3.5 days, there is a narrative arc that unfolds, and we have a series of exercises and things that we've created to facilitate more collaborations and connectivity. So that by the time you're halfway through the second day, you've interacted with 85% of the other, you know, the 100 people that are in the room. And so it's tightly designed as an experience up front, and then it starts to loosen up and allow for more white space, we call it, so you can create more intentional collisions. And, you know, the currency for Hatch, for us as a team, is collaboration. So if we can track a series of collaborations. And last year, we gave an exit survey and people reported that there were 7.5 collaborations per person. That's phenomenal, right? Like you can go to a conference and walk away with a bunch of business cards, and very few of those even pan out into something that becomes a tangible project. And in this case, we're really focused on, you know, accountable outcomes. So what started as a festival model has turned into more of a summit meets think tank. There's a series of labs that happen during Hatch, which are rapid prototyping and kind of design thinking and ideating around challenges that we face, like I mentioned before, with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. You know, from 2003, early 2004 is when it was conceived, and the first one was that fall in Bozeman, and there were, you know, red carpet and sky trackers in the sky, and there was a lot more kind of pomp and circumstance around it, because I thought that's what people would get excited about. But over the years, it's really just turned into more of a quieter and more intentional summit.
So we're going to take our little break now and enjoy more of our new theme song. And when we come back, I'd like to delve into that just a little bit more and talk about some of your key moments and the folks who attend. It sounds really, really fun.
Beautiful. Right.
This is Heartstock. We'll be right back. This is Heartstock. I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening in. We're speaking with Yarrow Craner. And Yarrow, can you talk just a little bit more about how you came up with this idea? I mean, it's always interesting to me how people choose their path. And what was the inspiration for Hatch? Did you know somebody that had done something like this before?
Well, it's a little bit of two stories. And I think the initial kind of inspiration for me personally was around moving to Los Angeles, thinking that I was going to be inspired every single day in this epicenter of creative geniuses. And, you know, 2 years in, I was at this Hollywood Hills party and everyone was so beautiful and looked just so successful and kind of looked the same as this almost like a mono person. And I walked outside and just looked at the sky and said, where are they? Where are these people going to inspire me? And as I asked that question, there was a voice that said, who? And this person, like right next to me, who I swore wasn't there a moment ago, we started talking, and he was a Czechoslovakian composer teaching deaf kids how to read and play music. And it just stopped me in my tracks. It was so profound. And I had all these different questions around the mechanics of it and the vibrations and the whole, you know, reward feedback mechanism, how it worked. And so that was a long conversation that evening. I went to bed that night, kind of fondly marinated on that. And the very next day, waiting in line for coffee, I struck up a conversation with this gentleman who turns out he was a scientist from Helsinki on this team to piece the ozone layer back together. And again, my jaw dropped, and I'm like, wow, you're like literally saving the world. Like, how do you bond ozone? Is it working? Like, yeah. Please tell me it's working. And
glue the molecules back together.
Exactly. So over, you know, the next 10 days, I would meet these crazy and amazing stories that inspired me. And that's when the Hero Project was born, Super Dudes. And so that was really the kind of the first iteration of the aha moment of what, you know, amazing humans are capable of, and then knowing that we are all born with that inside, and just by given the opportunity and sometimes being prompted or prodded to, you know, ask yourself, like, to define that, you can accomplish the impossible. But you know, we're not always asked those questions. And so we would find ourselves in inner city schools and working with young people who had never had someone sitting in front of them asking them to define what their real life superpowers were. And so that was a very resonant experience. And when I came back to Montana, there was a group here who wanted to start a film festival. And I said, well, let's do something that's not been done before. Let's not just do a film festival. Let's do a multimedia creativity meets technology and have it, you know, kind of founded in and around mentorship. And so that's when Hatch was born. And so Hatch, again, you know, kind of moved from a festival model to, you know, this kind of summit slash think tank. And at first, you know, it was hard to make that shift because I'm a very inclusionary person and didn't want it to feel exclusive or exclusionary. But we also recognize that there's a huge value in creating this protective bubble, a safe chamber in which people can get very vulnerable with each other. And you're not questioning whether that person to your left or your right is on the same page as you or not. Like, everyone gets, like, my motto for Hatch now is don't break the yoke. Everyone enters the experience together and exits it together. There's no keynotes that we fly in or, you know, special guests that fly in, fly out. Everyone experiences it all together. And the vulnerability that comes from that, the trust and the faith that comes from that is remarkable. And so that leads to these collaborations. So for instance, last year at Hatch, Dr. Sylvia Earle, who's the Jane Goodall of the oceans, and she was in the cover of Time magazine like a week before she came to Hatch. She's asking this question, like, how can we create more empathy and awareness around oceanic health? All of these, you know, efforts are around land conservation and protection, but where is that intentional action around oceans? It's 2/3 of our planet. It's literally the barometer of our existence. And so with that ask, a team forms around her, and it's, which includes, you know, Tom Gruber, the inventor of Siri, and the head of creative licensing for Lego, and a woman who's the CEO of a digital media platform, the head of immersive imaging at Facebook, and then two of the, like, young genius kind of high school students, and very diverse group of people who put their brains together to start thinking about how they can solve this challenge. And there was an initiative that launched a few weeks later and then was presented in Washington, D.C. at the largest environmental film festival in the world. And that continues to live on. And every year there's 10 projects that get launched. There's there's an attrition rate. Some of them don't last and some of them continue on and continue to make impact. So, but the kinds of people that we're looking to bring into Hatch are either on the front lines of solving challenges or someone who can support those who are.
So how do you decide who attends? Because it sounds like, and we kind of made some notes here, that diversity is really important at Hatch.
It is very important. Yeah, I mean, we strive every year to get as close to a 50-50 gender balance as possible. Over the years, you know, I love when, like, a woman CEO looks around the room and is like, wow, like, I'm not the only one. I'm used to being the only one. And when I come to these, you know, conferences and so forth, and it's like, no, it's, you know, we want a full representation of humanity here. And, you know, if an asteroid hits Earth, we could start a new civilization with the diversity that's in the room, diversity of age, gender, industry, experience, and so forth. I think that for us to be able to solve the challenges that we're facing currently on a global scale, you need to have as many diverse perspectives as possible weighing in on those possible solutions. And so I have a series of archetypes that I've kind of, you know, over the years have honed in on, and catalyzers and amplifiers. And, that, you know, I have my own way of kind of coding those. But, you know, if you have a bunch of, like, 100% creatives in the room, you're not necessarily going to have someone who can push the investment through or the distribution of that through or the awareness and amplification of that project through. So you need to really take into consideration these ecosystems of if you have a full ecosystem, an idea that's brought up in that room over the course of 3.5 days has all the ingredients present to be able to be taken to the world and presented at large scale.
That's a really great approach, and I love that. There was a little note here also, and this comes up from time to time on the show, and we've talked a little bit about this previously. It seems like we're at this intersection. There's a race between consciousness and catastrophe. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, that's a statement that we say often. For reference, Buckminster Fuller, who is a very famous architect, philosopher, and scientist, and he was one of the first to coin spaceship Earth, meaning that, like, we're all on it together. We share a living room. The pollution and impact that you inflict on this planet on one side, within a year impacts the other side of that planet. So the president of the Buckminster Fuller Institute is a man named David McConville, who's part of the Hatch Network and someone that I look up to. And he was a protege of Buckminster Fuller's. And he moved from his really beautiful little home in Asheville, North Carolina, to the Bay Area. And I flew down and met with him and was chatting with him and asked him why. You know, why did you leave that existence for, you know, for this existence. And he flipped over this napkin and wrote down these five different lines. And he said, if this, 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 and this doesn't reverse, not just get mitigated, but reverse in the next 18 to 19 years, we pass the point of no return. I moved here to accelerate my work. And I'm like, whoa, I thought we had like an 80 to 90 year window in that margin of error, which already felt short to me. But when he said 18 to 19 years, on the plane ride home, I just decided to stop everything else I was doing, which included making my living as a director and marketing person, and just put all chips on black with Hatch and try to, as fast as possible, scale up the efforts and around supporting the people that are on these front lines working on these challenges. Because, I mean, ultimately, Hatch is made up of all of the people that are doing these important projects. So I closed the doors on our production company 2 years ago. I had been a volunteer for Hatch for 13 years. Last year was the first year I took a salary. And now we're serious. You know, we've had a series of think tanks around how we can quickly scale, what kind of partnerships we can broker, working a little bit closer with members of the United Nations and advisors to the UN. So that's, you know, the race between consciousness and catastrophe is if we can help people become more conscious and wake up, essentially, they will have more awareness around the health of the planet, the health of their families and communities, and the health of within themselves. You know, like one of the statements we used to say with the Hero Project was, how do you save the world? Start with where you are. And if everybody did that, if everybody started with where they are, which not only just means geographically, but internally, and, you know, tapping into more mindful practices and empathy, there can be a massive global shift, but it needs to happen like fairly soon.
So do you remember what was on that list? A few of the items, maybe. Yeah. What was on his list that said, if these things don't happen within 18 plus or minus years, we'll be on the point of no return?
Well, carbon sequestration is one of them, which means replanting a bunch of rainforest that's being ripped out of the earth. Also means changing practices around soil regeneration, which, you know, right now means not tilling, letting soil is the single most most powerful ally that we have in carbon monoxide sequestrations. And so there's a series of, you can go to bfi.org, I think it is. Let me double check on that. And there's a list of things that can happen, you know, within your own reach, right? I mean, sometimes I think that we all feel a little bit helpless and we're not really sure where to start. But if you go to bfi.org, there's a series of lists, and Project Drawdown is another one, projectdrawdown.org. I highly recommend educating yourself on that.
What does BFI, what's that stand for?
But BFI is the Buckminster Fuller Institute.
Gotcha. So we've got just short of a minute left. How might folks contact you and get more involved in all of these ideas?
Well, you can learn more about Hatch at hatchexperience.org. And my email address is yarrow at hatchexperience.org. And there's a link on there where you can click get involved or apply to come. And we're always looking for strong team members that can, you know, help us put together these conferences, these summits. And we do, you know, in between the summits, we do these things called Hatch Labs, which are rapid ideating think tanks to kind of break companies through innovation barriers. And so helping people kind of get unstuck at large corporate levels. And so last year we did labs with Intel and Ernst & Young, Hasbro, GoPro, and a very effective way for us to be able to make large scale impact by working with these companies that have such a, you know, legitimate footprint on the planet.
Love what you're doing. Unfortunately, we are out of time. And thank you so much, Yarrow, for sharing what you're doing. And thank you for doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I want to give a big shout out to one of our biggest supporters in Butte, Headframe Spirits, and John and Courtney McKee.
Yes.
You guys are very innovative folks and really appreciate them being part of our family.
Yes, they are stars in Butte for sure. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.